Right, so Keir Starmer has finally legged it from the seat he's squatted in for the last 11 years, all despite promising his constituents he would stay as their MP until the end of his term. So, going out the way he came in which case, lying all the way. But now Zach Palatsky is sharpening his pitchfork to have his turn and give the people of Holborn and St Pancras an MP who might purport to actually represent them and, well, actually mean it. For those of you who haven't been watching the Labour Party's nervous twitches at every mention of the words left wing, though, Palatsky's the Green Party leader. He's just celebrated a year in the role, in fact. But in that time, he's managed to drag the Greens from being Westminster's favourite punchline into an electoral force whose presence the other parties have either been forced to pretend to respect or have demanded the Greens stay in their climate change lane and stop nicking their voters, as if they've got some preordained right to them. The party's membership's risen from 70,000 to over 230,000 under Palatsky. It's won its first by-election, two mayors, even got a couple of its members into the Senate for the first time ever. So suddenly Labour's smug belief that progressive voters have no choice but to stick with them, despite not being particularly progressive, has been looking less and less convincing for a while now. Palatsky's now announced his plans to run in Holborn and St Pancras now, and in all honesty, he didn't have a lot of choice in my view. He said he wanted to be a London MP, given that's where he is based these days, and now that opportunity's come up. Now, given it's come up in now in the recently deposed and now rapidly departed former Prime Minister's seat, though, for Labour to lose it, it's going to be a kick in the unmentionables worthy of a paragraph in the history books, isn't it? That's why, no doubt, Labour HQ is collectively clenching its fists right now. This isn't just a young Green sent to pad out a ballot paper. They face a party leader here, who has been on a roll. And no amount of snide column inches about being a former Lib Dem or snarky tweets calling him the tit whisperer are going to change that. You might even call this a last flicker of revenge from a particularly petulant Starmer aimed at his successor here, Andy Burnham, who has now been left clutching a parcel and it's ticking a little bit. I'm scrawled on one side with good luck, love Keith on one side of it, and apparently leaking something rather sticky and smelly and suspicious. But before the establishment gets too excited over this, the Greens have this little process called democracy in their party. We have a thing called, well, I'm a Green as well, aren't I? We have this little thing called democracy. We have process. Just because Zach is the leader and Zach has announced his intentions to run here doesn't mean he, despite being party leader, will necessarily be given that chance. Palatsky's announced that he will seek the Green nomination, not that he's seizing it. Bit different from other parties, such as Labour. But that simply means he's putting himself forward and is not yet nominated because the local party get to decide. Local members get to decide, not him. And they will now have to go through the selection, examine all of the applicants, should there be others, and let eligible members choose who will get to stand on their behalf. It's a novelty ordinary members getting a final say in such things, isn't it? But it shouldn't really be that way, should it? Well, it's not beat around the bush here either. There's no subtlety to this choice to run, is there? He might as well be going for a walk down Camden High Street in a bright green jumpsuit, swinging a sledgehammer with Eye of the Tiger blaring out of a portable speaker over all of this. He wants the seat. He wants a way into Parliament. He's never hidden the fact, and he might well get it here too. He's got a damn good chance, because the patch Starmer just abandoned without apparently a second thought, though obviously not without claiming his pay for the summer recess period, you will have noticed, is about as shaky as a table with three legs. Someone else understands that very well as well. In 2024, Andrew Feinstein came second after standing as an independent against Starmer, having put Gaza at the centre of his campaign, which the Greens have done in their policy moves as well. So listen to how he describes the type of person he thinks should replace Starmer, though he won't himself be running again now.
The next MP for Holborn and St Pancras needs to be the antithesis of Keir Starmer in every possible way, personally, politically, needs to represent the very opposite values that Keir Starmer has represented, because I think he has been an embarrassment to the vast majority of people of our very diverse borough. And whether
but
that's
do you want
me
it to
or
be
not.
You?
So I don't want it to be me. I honestly believe I'm 62 years old. You know, why do we need another white old man in Parliament?
That was a political slap in the face and a deserved one. Feinstein said that Starmer had not only dissatisfied some people, but also taken some unpopular decisions. No shit. He said that the future Member of Parliament should stand for the opposite principles, and I think that's a basic starting point. And whether you agree with this sentiment or not, you can't deny the political facts behind it. Starmer leaves his seat with a substantial part of its progressive electorate already having voted against him. Starmer perhaps had left the area of impact now, but Labour is still standing in the blast zone, blinking through the smoke as Starmer scurries off without a single look back. As for Andy Burnham, he now gets to see how the Labour Party defends the record of its former leader in the one seat where voters have the opportunity to judge Starmer as their own representative, with an entire nation watching on looking for an upset too. Go on, Andy, defend him. Remind everyone what you had to do to get back into Parliament, to take over the job, because he wasn't going to go unless you did. Remind everyone that you've come in to save Labour from oblivion and now defend the record of the man who has been destroying it for so long, as you now try to convince the people of Holborn and St Pancras to stick with Labour after 11 years of him. The constituency can say what they really think of their deserting MP, given how he's gone too, an MP who clearly didn't care less about them. And it's not just the narrative that falls in Polanski's favour here, but the numbers do as well. In 2024, Starmer won 18,884 votes. That was 48.9%. Feinstein came second with 7,312 votes, 18.9%. And the Green Party candidate David Stansel won 4,030 votes, or 10.4%. So together, Feinstein and the Greens took just shy of 30%. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean Polanski gets to start with 30% this time around. By-elections are a bit different, aren't they? Some Feinstein voters will not vote Green. Green voters may behave differently in a by-election. Turnout will undoubtedly change. The Labour Party will run a new candidate, obviously, and every other party will have something to say too. But this 30% figure, 29.3% figure, does point to something rather disquieting too. Because there was already a considerable anti-Labour vote lurking on Labour's own left flank, right in Starmer's own backyard. All before he even bothered to pack his suitcase. With Andy Burnham in charge now, has that changed? That is the leading question, because not much else has except the accent of the man in charge now, has it? Starmer's share had collapsed by 17.3 percentage points on the new boundaries. That's still a big problem for a not particularly impressive Burnham, even if anyone but Starmer would likely do better. Starmer had already lost a great deal of support. An independent challenger had already built up a significant following, as Andrew Feinstein did. The Greens had already gained more than 10%, and now the National Green leader wants to step into the gap left by Starmer. The leader. That counts for something too.
The communities. The human stories of resilience, determination, and the belief that it does not have to be this way, that there is an alternative.
And I just think if people want change, we got to vote for it.
This is the moment, and we have to meet it. Hope is here. It's all of us.
Now, this was obviously pure party promo. And why not, quite frankly? It's all designed to make the Greens look like an insurgence with a conger of cheerful volunteers in matching T-shirts. But we Greens do come from all walks of life and don't all smell faintly of vegan sausage rolls and wheatgrass either. But there's a serious underlying argument that matters here too, because Holborn and St Pancras offer Polanski the opportunity to test it, where Labour cannot easily defend itself now. If the Greens do well in some random Conservative district, for example, then Labour can say it was local issues. It was never their part. If they win votes in Brighton, which has been a Green heartland for some time, Labour can say, well, Brighton is Brighton, and the Green presence is already pretty strong there. But if the leader of the Green Party can really rattle Labour in the ex-Prime Minister's own backyard, after Starmer's support had already plummeted there, it's not as easy to dismiss it as just another outbreak of the local lentil worshippers getting their act together. It speaks of a danger within Labour's own electorate. Polanski's public pitch is a blunt one. He claims the Labour Party serves corporations and big money. Pretty hard to argue against. That he wants to stand up for communities who constantly get abandoned. And I dare say, after 11 years of Starmer in Holborn and St Pancras, a few of the residents there will have something to say on those terms too. But in more concrete terms, what Polanski's pitch is going to be all about rent controls, which Labour have ruled out, bringing water back into public ownership, not the public control farce that Burnham is currently trying to sell. Stopping energy bills from spiking whenever oil prices wobble, and taxing wealth rather than already squeezing wage earners. He wants to tax the super rich, equalise capital gains tax with income tax, use that money to reduce bills and fund public services rather than sharehold dividends. People getting richer off the back of poorer and poorer services they were all suffering with. It's not simply a question of be nicer to the planet, as the establishment says when it wants to pat the Greens on the head. The argument is much more simple and much more brutal than that. The people rinsing you for rent and water and energy, they're doing just fine, aren't they? So why act like they're the ones who need a hug here then? Especially during this summer's heat waves. Polanski argued that climate breakdown was not just some distant polar bear issue that could be pushed aside until a minister's finished admiring a new gas terminal in Rosebank. It's a present reality affecting our food prices, water, energy. People stuck in homes have become unbearable as temperatures rise because our homes simply aren't built for these conditions. He's also spoken out against Labour's enthusiasm for massive AI data centres, asking why tech giants are invited to guzzle the water that there's a shortage of and we're paying too much for, and the power that we're getting screwed over as well, and money. Well, ordinary people are told there isn't enough for the basics, there isn't enough for them. That's the stronger green voice that he offers. Climate policy that doesn't dump the bill on everybody else, but that accepts it goes hand in hand with social justice, that it's all part of the same issues that affect all of us. Greens called the election a referendum on ending rip-off Britain as a result, and that is campaign speak, obviously, but it's also true. It should cut through. We are being ripped off, and have been for decades. The minute election leaflets start coming through the letterbox, every by-election turns into a referendum on something after all, doesn't it? So why not this? Because beneath all of that branding lies a much more difficult question for Labour. Can it still assume that renters and students and younger voters and Gaza-conscious voters and disaffected progressives will return to that party simply because the alternative might be worse? Because that's all their pitch is ever going to be, isn't it? You'll let the Tories in, you'll let Reform in if you don't back us. For years, Labour's pitch to the left has basically been, where else are you going to go, mate? The cupboard's bare, so eat your gruel and be grateful for us. Well, Polanski's providing another option. And as much as the media are going to try and convince you he's awful, they've clutched at straws for all of this time so far, and he's still smiling. Perhaps there's more to it than they're telling you. For one, he's chosen Starmer's abandoned constituency as the site to make that argument. Labour dumped you. Are you going to keep going back to them for more? Becomes a more significant argument when you hear that Feinstein says about cooperation between his local organisation and the Greens, because, well, that's rather telling as well.
I also think that we've got to be sensible on the left. We've got to ensure, you know, opinion polls show, because of course now my name suddenly appears in the polls, which they never did during the election or in the years subsequent to. And we're just in the local elections. My little organization, the Camden People's Alliance, had a sort of an agreement, an alliance with the Greens. So we stood in two wards and won a councillor where the Greens didn't stand.
Now, of course, that does not amount to Feinstein specifically endorsing Polanski here. At least he hasn't done that yet. It certainly doesn't transfer Feinstein's 7,000 odd votes to anybody, actually. But what it does show is that the Camden People's Alliance, that he stood as a representative of, and the Green Party already cooperate locally. They share political territory. They swap memes on WhatsApp, and they know that splitting the anti-Labour vote is the quickest way to let Labour romp home once again in this seat while whistling things can only get better. The left's true superpower is turning one argument with the establishment into seven arguments with itself and splitting itself faster than a cheese string in a school lunchbox. But in this constituency, people around Feinstein and the Greens, they've worked together before. That doesn't settle the election, but it does remove one reason for Labour to feel relaxed here. That's a significant ground game with everything to play for, isn't it? Feinstein came out of nowhere, broadly speaking, yet the ground game was there for him. And that's a ground game that cooperates with the Greens' ground game. And the Greens, as we know, as we've seen in Gorton and Denton recently, they've got a hell of a ground game when they get their act together. The favourite trick of the media is to turn all of this into a round of Westminster bingo, isn't it? Can the colourful Green leader pull rabbits out of a hat? Will Labour's majority wobble, and who has the momentum? Sure, you could argue they're legitimate electoral questions from a certain point of view. Cue a pundit waving at a touchscreen while arrows do the cha-cha and graphics whiz around giving everyone a migraine. The mainstream horse race routine, we could call it. But it neatly avoids the awkward question of why this gaping hole exists in the first place. Because Polanski didn't cause Starmer's vote to fall by 17.3 points, did he? He didn't make 18.9% of the constituency vote for Feinstein either. He didn't become leader until after all of that. He didn't persuade Starmer to resign after 11 years and create this mess. Polanski's just poking at the bruise Labour's given itself. The press has got a way of portraying Polanski's move as a cheeky smash and grab. Labour would love that, because then the entire fiasco is seen as unsporting mischief rather than the result of years of self-inflicted damage. These are our voters. How dare you try and take them away from us and all that kind of thing. The more inconvenient truth of it, though, is that Labour spent years torching its relationship with its own voters, never acting in their interests, and then acting shocked when someone else notices the smell of burning. There's also a temptation to make this entirely about Gaza as well. In his campaign, Feinstein brought Gaza front and centre, and it clearly mattered to many of those who backed him. And Feinstein's got a particular interest in this as well, being Jewish himself. Starmer's Zionist position has caused deep anger in voters who had once seen Labour as their home, but blaming the whole collapse on Gaza is a little too convenient, because Gaza didn't cause the rupture, it just exposed it. It gave some voters both an urgent moral reason to act and cause to be utterly disgusted by their supposed representative, who seemed far more interested in representing Tel Aviv than them. The grumbling goes way beyond Gaza, and by making it all about that, genuine concerns about stuff that matters to people here and now. The housing, the rent, the inequality, the public services, Labour's relations with big money, the creeping suspicion that the party of change now spends its days proving that change is terribly inconvenient and has to be postponed until further notice just to fall by the wayside later on. Polanski's task is to draw all of these diverse grievances into one campaign. It's no mean feat. But that's also why Polanski's run is a much bigger headache for Labour than merely rerunning Feinstein's campaign with a Green Party sticker slapped on the front of it. Another parliamentary seat for the Greens would be a substantial prize for the party. Winning that particular seat would be something even more than that, because it would allow the Greens to crow that Labour's losses aren't just a few protest votes or some council ward nobody can find on a map here. It would show that Labour can be challenged in the symbolic heart of Starmer's own political career, the former Prime Minister who's just exited that role and now exited politics completely. And for Burnham, that creates a problem either way, because if Labour loses, the humiliation will be obvious. If, however, after throwing national resources at the seat, they manage to cling on, Polanski will still be able to say the ex-Prime Minister's own patch had to be dragged back from the brink. Even if Labour wins comfortably, they will still have to explain why the contest even looked juicy enough for the Green leader to show up in person and have a crack at it. The clever part of Polanski's move is that he doesn't have to inherit every Feinstein voter, nor begin as the favourite, which he isn't, or to force Labour to spend time, people and resources defending the ground Starmer left behind, seemingly without a second thought. But momentum's partly about persuading people that voting for you is no longer futile. That's always been the Greens' brick wall in Westminster. Voters nod along, then decide only Labour can win, and wander off to vote for the least worst option yet again, and nothing changes. With five MPs these days, though, and the memory of Gorton and Denton still fresh in many people's minds, the Greens have never been in a better position to knock some of those bricks out and bring the establishment edifice down like a tree-hugging Fred Dibner. A by-election scrambles that logic. No government is on the line, and voters are free to punish or dabble or send a warning shot without waking up to a new Prime Minister yet again in the morning. But once things start to look genuinely spicy, the old argument about the whole wasted vote argument starts to look as limp as a lettuce in a heatwave. There's been a few of them. That's what Labour really has to stamp out. Not just a Green win, but the dangerous idea that a Green win could actually happen, and that voting for them isn't just a hobby for people who own a compost bin. Labour will still have money and voter data and MPs bust in from wherever they can be spared and enough printed literature to deforest half of Camden. That much is guaranteed. But what it doesn't have is the sturdy local operation this seat once had. Starmer's years as MP drove members and activists and voters away. He hasn't left behind a loyal Labour force. He has left behind a hollowed out shell and an electorate that's already made its disgust obvious when Andrew Feinstein bagged 18.9% last time. So Labour's strategy is likely to be less about enthusiasm and more about containment. Find a plausible candidate. Throw national resources at the seat. Make Polanski out to be an outsider or a protest vote, even though he sits on the London Assembly, of course. And hope the Burnham bounce carries them over the line once again. The problem is that would mean asking voters to separate the new leader from the record of the man who just deserted them. Many people in Holborn and St Pancras, I'm sure, will feel that Labour owes them an explanation about that, and who can blame them? Polanski will have to win the Green selection before he can formally become its candidate. There's about a week to go for that, just about. Then he must convince people who back different campaigns for different reasons to rally round him to take down Labour. So nothing about this is automatic at all. But Labour is equally not entitled to treat the seat like a family heirloom handed down with silverware and a few embarrassing old photos. They already got a warning shot in the general election over this. Starmer's exit has turned that warning into a full-blown bar brawl now. The question is no longer whether progressive voters were angry with him. We know many of them were. God knows an awful lot of us across the country are very angry with him, to put it politely. So the question is whether that anger remains attached to Labour after Starmer himself has gone. And really it should, because what exactly has changed since Burnham has taken over?
And I think those are the sort of politics. I really like the idea of local politics driving radical politics in the country going forward. So I think there are a lot of conversations to have on the left. And I think we are a long way away from saying A or B or C should be the candidate. I think the commitment has to be to the type of person we want to see representing the people of Holborn and St. Pancras. And I do feel a very deep responsibility to ensuring that that is the anti-Keir Starmer.
The headache's right there in four words. Labour wants this by-election to be about continuity, a new face, the same party, everyone back to pretending nothing has happened and, as if we needed reminding, nothing has changed. But a hefty chunk of the constituency has already binned that idea. They weren't happy with it before. The loudest challenger from 2024 is now shouting for the exact opposite of what Starmer stood for. And all because Starmer left behind the perfect storm for a challenge like this. Labour's vote has shrunk. The opposition is actually organised. The anger is bubbling over more than one issue. And the by-election lets voters swing a boot at a government that doesn't appear to be learning anything. And that's why the establishment is twitchy here. Not because Polanski's already taken Starmer's seat, or stolen it as they might put it, but because Starmer left it wobbly enough for the Green leader to fancy his chances. Starmer scarpered, he's left Burnham to mop up the mess. Polanski now finally gets his shot at a parliamentary seat, where he said he would always stand, in London. And I imagine just as we saw in Gorton and Denton, Greens from across the country will be descending on Camden in a way Labour can only dream of. For more on the last days of Keir Starmer, I put together a greatest hits piece here, yes, just yesterday. All of his biggest lies, many of which you might have forgotten, so do check them out to remind yourself just what reasons the people of Camden might have to still have an issue with Labour. Please do also hit like, share and subscribe if you haven't done so already, so as to ensure you don't miss out on all new daily content, as well as spreading the word and helping support the channel at the same time, which is very much appreciated. Holding power to account for ordinary working class people, and I'll hopefully catch you on the next one. I am taking a week off after today, some time away with the family, rest and a recharge. Normal service will resume on the 13th. So once again, many thanks for watching and for all of your kind support. And I'll be back soon. Cheers, folks.